Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Hairhawk. I'm Sean Cantwell. It is a pretty nice day out there thus far.
It's going to storm, but you know what? It's so muggy out there. Bring it on.
Yeah, honestly, I'm entirely fine with this. We could probably really use it.
I don't want it to storm too bad because then downtown Lapeer goes out of power and it's ladies' night tonight for all the stores. So I don't want them to be all upset.
Yeah, we don't need that in our lives. Now, we got plenty of sports stuff to get to today, and I find myself having to lead off with the Tigers once again.
Wah, wah.
And not for the best of reasons, because look, I am probably more of a diehard Tiger fan than anyone in this enterprise, honestly. Like, I was going to Tiger games from the time I was a kid growing up in Detroit, man. Ma tells me that her and my dad would go to Tiger games while she was pregnant with me. I still have some at home. My Tigers program from like 95, the last game I went to at Tiger Stadium. I've been to a ton of playoff games over the years. I was supposed to be at the one where the Tigers would clinch over the Yankees to go to the World Series in 2012. Funny story, I'll tell you sometime.
Okay.
And for the last decade now, we go down to Comerica Park, James Tiberius Alt and myself, down to downtown Detroit to revel in what is the best party that my hometown puts on every year, Tigers opening day. And I'm sitting here before you on this afternoon of May 17th, 2024, to tell you, I don't know if I can keep doing this summer. This is getting beyond absurd. And the things I hear from the people in charge of this team and this organization do not have me feeling particularly good about spending the rest of my summer this way. We kind of know the score by now. This team can't hit. They break out for like one, like 8 to 10 run performance like every couple weeks or so. But for the most part, this team can't get a timely hit if their lives depended on it. The pitching, fantastic. You couldn't ask for more for some of these guys. I mean, for real, what does Reese Olson have to do to get a win? He's barely given up any runs since he's been starting for this team this season. Like, I think he's given up at max 2 runs any given night, and that's not enough to win ball games for this team because, again, hitting and clutch hitting are not things that exist here. And, of course, there are some things that have been done. Parker Meadows did get sent down, which needed to happen because he's been terrible. Colt Keith really can't do much about that. Like, I don't think you can send him down. I don't think it would help to send him down. You just kind of got to let him grow through it. It's literally his rookie season. It's going to happen. Torque, I mean, you got to hope that it pans out by the end of the year. Because if it doesn't, I'm not sure you're going to see him in the majors after that. Then there's the curious case of one Javier Baez. A man who currently has the lowest OPS and the lowest batting average among qualified major league hitters. And somehow, this guy is still not only on this team, but in the lineup on a nightly basis. And to hear AJ Hinch tell it on Wednesday, before the embarrassing outing this team had against a bottom-feeding Marlins team, that's not going to change anytime soon. Roll the audio.
There's a fine line between balance and then being disciplined and just sort of sitting him next to me, because sitting him next to me doesn't improve timing. And he does have a track record of getting hot, and he has a track record of being cold. And those are sort of areas that we're trying to shrink the cold ones and lengthen the hot ones. Playing is often the answer. So the benchings aren't because of failure. The benching should be because of effort or because of preparation or because of a lack of discipline or a lack of focus of some sort. So as long as these guys are healthy, we're going to stay with them, and I'm going to sprinkle in some off days. But to turn our back on him doesn't make him better.
Now, I have a multitude of issues with that statement. For one, this isn't just, oh, he's going to get his timing right eventually. This is 2 years of this now. This has been literally the entire time that he has been with this team. And it hasn't gotten any better. In fact, it has only gotten worse. Is having him in the lineup every day helping him get any better? The answer would seem to be no. But here's the other kind of component to this. I don't believe that AJ Hinch believes what he just said in that clip.
I don't think so.
I don't think he believes that for a second. He does not think that continuing to play Javi Baez on the regular is going to be good for him or for this ball club.
I have something to add to this, but I'm going to let you get it out that you need to get out. But I got something to add to this.
Okay. I'll tell you what my theory is.
Okay.
He's being told from above that he has to play Javi.
That touches on kind of what I was about to bring in.
There's no way that he's not getting orders from Chris Illich to keep Javi in the lineup. Because...
How much is Illich paying for him? Paying him?
A lot.
Yeah.
Like, close to $100 million. And I, for one, do not believe for a second that Hinch believes that. And I believe truly that this has to be an edict from above. Because if it's not, you're just telling us you don't care. And that this team doesn't care. And that no one in charge of this team cares. Because that's what I'm hearing otherwise. You're paying a guy $25 million this season to be the worst qualified hitter in the entire sport. And you have three more seasons at which you're going to continue to pay him around $24 to $25 million to probably continue to be the worst hitter in the sport. He declined his opt-out, so you're stuck with him. And that six-year, $140 million albatross of a contract, because Chris Illich refuses to just do what needs to be done here and cut the guy. And obviously he has no trade value, so that's not an option.
Nope.
But you're telling me that he has to play, that is what's really the best interest of him and this team? Because I'll tell you, I don't think it is. Because the more we see time go on with him, it seems like he's gotten more, like the bad attitude that we've known about with him since at least the Mets and possibly with the Cubs has come out on a multitude of occasions with this team. He goes out and says he doesn't care, and then goes and makes gestures and things to the fans and suggests, oh yeah, he cares.
Yep.
He actively hates being here. He couldn't make that possibly any more clear to you if he tried. And yet,
he opted
out. This charade.
he
didn't opt out. He declined the option to opt out last year.
Yeah.
You know why? Because no one else is going to pay him.
He knew he wasn't getting anything else.
He wasn't leaving that $100 million on the table.
Nope.
Because he knew he'd never get another deal again above league minimum. So instead, here we sit. And we find ourselves sitting here in this situation where you know it's not a good fit. I know it's not a good fit. Everyone in the offices at Comerica Park knows this is a bad idea and they need to stop it. But won't. And it really just kind of suggests to me that there's not really anybody here in a position of authority that cares. That wants to even make an attempt to field a competitive team. How do I know this? I watch an offseason in which you clearly needed offense and you signed Mark Canha and nobody else. You basically have, on any given night, realistically, seven positions on your lineup card that should probably be up for grabs, at least. You have Riley Green. No one else should be safe. Like, there's no way that you shouldn't be able to sign someone else that could hit better than most of the other guys on this roster, with the exception of, like, Riley Green, who currently, at least batting average-wise, not hitting great, or Kerry Carpenter. Like, there's no reason that some of these guys shouldn't have been replaced by people who could actually hit. Well, now that Ibanez is back, maybe we'll get to see him get more reps in the infield. Wenciel Perez has certainly been a nice surprise as well. But you look at some of this other stuff, and you think, how can they keep running this guy out here? And look, I don't want to do here in mid-May. I don't want to start doing the show where we talk about, well, we could trade Scooble at the deadline. I'm not wanting to punt on this season this early on. I don't want to be doing the trade show, the trade deadline show, like 2 months before we have the actual trade deadline. I'd like to have enjoyed this somewhat with this just out-of-this-world pitching staff that you have before we start talking about selling guys. And yet that's what I'm already hearing. That's what we're already kind of getting conditioned to be ready for, is that they're going to try and sell potentially some of these arms at the deadline. And that's depressing. I'm sorry. It really just, it's going to make for such a long summer if that's the spot that we're already at, that we've got to start looking at selling on a guy like Skubal, who is pitching at like a Cy Young clip, who's got 2 years of arbitration left, who I really truly hoped would be here by the time this team was actually a contender. But apparently, barring the ability to put together even something approaching a competent AAA offense, I feel like these are the shows that we're going to be doing in the not-too-distant future. And that sucks, man. There's no way around this. I didn't want to start the weekend going to Memorial Day next weekend already talking about this, but we find ourselves with very little choice. We find ourselves just kind of sitting here, resigned to the fact that this team's not going to do the basic things that it could do to improve its current situation, and that we're just going to kind of have to deal with that. Strap yourselves in. It's going to be a long summer, everybody. It is happy hour. A lot more uplifting stuff, hopefully, to do next. Stick around. All right, enough talking about a franchise that is the equivalent of that dog in a burning room saying, "This is fine." Let's talk about a team that has at least somewhat a little more actual future ahead of it. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Yeah!
So, I don't know if you've seen this. Max Boltman over at The Athletic, he had a few things to say about his speculation, basically, about what moves this team is going to make in the offseason. What kind of things the Wings might actually do, and will they actually be more aggressive in this offseason? Like, he'd been asked about, particularly, how much of a priority is it to acquire a legitimate top six center, if it is a priority? What are the potential targets for the Wings via free agency or even trade?
Okay.
So, Boltman starts off with, "I don't think the Red Wings will see center as a major priority this summer. They've brought in centers JT Compher and Andrew Kopp the last two summers in free agency and used top 10 picks on Nate Danielson and Marco Kasper in the last two drafts. I also don't see Detroit going out and throwing more money, or more specifically, more salary cap allocation at the position with Danielson and Kasper on the way. I would expect Danielson to be the Red Wings' answer at second-line center long-term. Until then, I think the Wings will be content with Compher in that spot."
Danielson is just tearing it up. 17 postseason games with the Portland Winterhawks. 7 goals, 16 assists. He's a plus 14. I mean, the guy is just killing it.
He is, but he's not going to be ready next season. He's not probably going to be ready till maybe the season after that. But here's something I was really kind of, sours me on the Eiser plan a little bit. Everyone is expecting elite next season, but inevitably losing some key vets, growing pains for young players in hard competition. Do you really expect a playoff berth? Boltman says, "This is a great question because there's a real chance the Red Wings could be in for a step back next season, largely because of an experienced infusion of young players. Eisman said he'll need to make room for Jonathan Berggren and Albert Johansson, and if both are on the roster, the same will be true for them."
Yep.
"There's a solid chance one of Danielson, Carter Mazur, or Kasper makes the team too. Whether that means a step back or a step forward or a possible playoff berth depends on what else they can do this summer. If they mostly promote internally, it will be hard to expect a postseason run."
I don't disagree with that. As much as that, not what we want to hear, because since Eiserman's taken over, this team has progressed ever so slightly every season to where they were one game away from making the playoffs. But you're losing some guys. Will Kane re-sign? We don't know. Just go ahead and figure that he's not going to re-sign. If he does, nice surprise. But he was a lot of your offense.
Yeah, so, I'm increasingly doubtful that that's going to be the case.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with Perron.
I've heard nothing on Perron, but they're saying Kane wants, like, real term, which is...
He's 35, so real term means you were paying him that money.
That sounds like it means he wants more than the 2 years that the Wings are probably going to offer him.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to start bringing in some of these young guys. Marco Kasper is doing very well for the Griffins in their playoffs. So we just talked about Danielson. Danielson. I mean, would it be so terrible to have a 19-year-old center on the team? I mean, we've done it before.
Would it be? Probably not, but it's basically the idea that you're expecting that the team is going to take a step back from where they already didn't make the playoffs last year.
It's a very real thing, but I mean, you got choice A, make that take that extra step, make the playoffs, and then just be cannon fodder for the likes of Florida and Boston. Or do you take a step back, take a couple steps back so you can get a running start at this with some good young talent? Kasper, Danielson, Berggren, Johansson. I mean, as opposed to the rubber hip Patrick Kane or the increasingly getting older David Perron. And Andrew Kopp, he has not progressed here in Detroit. He's got like 2 or 3 more years on that contract, and I don't see him really moving the needle for anybody.
Certainly neither do I, but that being said, I also don't like the idea of taking further steps. Like, how many further steps are we taking back? We're now through 5 years of the Iser plan.
Yep.
How far back are we going to have? Do we have to keep going to start going forward consistently?
Well, I mean, looking into my crystal ball, you go ahead and take a step back, and then later become a Stanley Cup contender, not just a playoff contender, a Stanley Cup contender in 2 or 3 seasons, or you can go ahead and make the playoffs now and just keep take the Maple Leafs route and just keep getting bounced in the first round.
Why do those have to be mutually exclusive, though? Why can't we push towards making our team better in the short term and with some actual real signings in free agency and working the kids in and not ultimately push to have a sustainable Stanley Cup? Like, I'm not saying trade the farm for anything.
Well,
I'm just saying, why can't we improve our status and make the moves to make this team at least move further in the contending direction now?
Because you only got 12 spots for forwards. I mean, you could bring it. I mean, let's just say, ha ha ha, they bring in Stamkos, you know, which would help. But that's another thing where we can get lit up in the first round. That's a roster spot that could go to somebody like a Marco Kasper. And to cultivate his career and make him better.
Yeah, but this team has managed to work young guys and rookies into their lineup before and still keep making be at least making steps towards contention or actually actively contending. Like, I feel like it doesn't have to be an either-or proposition. We can get a guy who can actually score this offseason and still leave some room for a Danielson or a Kasper to make their way up and prove themselves.
I mean,
on the defensive side of things, there's plenty of room for upgrades.
Yeah.
You have Edvinson and Dialtone.
Cider.
Edvinson, Cider, Dialtone.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, really nothing.
They're really pushing. A lot of people are saying that they're going to bring Shane Gostisbehere back, and I don't hate that idea.
I don't either, but I'm not expecting it.
Yeah. He's going to want more money. And he certainly, I mean, he wasn't lighting the lamp every single night, but he was doing what you asked him to do. Yeah, blue line, they need to address that. If everybody's talking about, like, go get that stud centerman. No, you need that right shot defenseman. You need to really bolster that blue line.
That's far more important.
And goaltending. And goaltending.
Goaltending is certainly something that I could see making upgrades there, but who are you going and getting?
There's that cat.
Are you going and trading for Ullmark from Boston?
That'd be awesome. Oh, my God. Yeah, I wasn't going to go that route. It was somebody whose name completely escapes me for out of Minnesota because they're still riding the Flurry train and full understanding why. Kudos to you, Minnesota. But they got that cat over there. Are you looking him up? Because I'm kind of stymied over here.
Philip Gustafson.
Yeah, he is.
He didn't do well last year.
He
had an under 900 save percentage. He had a goals against over 3.
But most of his career, I believe, was like in the 2.8, 9.
It's very hit and miss with him.
Is it?
With Ottawa, he had the worst season of his career at three with a 355. So it goes 216, 355, 210, 306. So we're basically bringing back, you know, one of the guys that we've had, or a net, or somebody who's like super inconsistent in net. No, hard pass.
Well, I mean,
I got to pay any kind of money for him, not interested.
Yeah, I mean, the current goaltender situation, all three goalies at one point in this season had that moment where, like, okay, this is a guy. But then it's like, Husso, you can't keep him healthy. Reimer, you never know what you're going to get. He's like a Forrest Gump box of chocolates. Then Alex Lyon, you worked him like a rented mule.
I'm fine with rolling forward with a decent, a good acquisition in goalie, and Lyon is the backup.
I think you get Sebastian Kosa.
I don't think he's ready.
Mikasa, Isukasa. Get him in there as a backup and not go the tandem route like everybody's trying to do. Get that one guy, you know, have Husso be the number one guy and Kosa start 15 game, 20 games.
Is Kosa really ready yet? I mean, last year's numbers aren't terrible necessarily, but .913 save percentage and .241 goals against in AAA. In Grand Rapids, he's going to get rocked if he gets called up right now.
Point taken, but I mean, we've got him. We want to see what we've got.
I know, but I need to see at least the first half of next season that he can do a little bit better before we start talking about anointing him the goalie of the present here.
Because you got him, you got Trey Augustine from the Spartans. Sparty on. Doing well. So basically, we're just looking for a stopgap between before it's the Kosa and Trey Augustine show.
That's fair.
I don't know who else is out there, but
Augustine's pretty far out, though, isn't it?
It's going to be a while before we see Trey out there. Who else are you going to get? Some people are trying to say that Yzerman's going to go after Nedeljkovic, and that's not.
You already had that. We tried that once. It didn't work. Nope. There's no reason to go through this again. We got to hit a break, though. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and it is that time of the week where we kind of take a pause from lamenting the state of the Tigers and the Red Wings, etc., and have a little bit of fun. It's time for Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice.
Woohoo!
Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and I think we do this better than the people who get paid to do it for a living.
All right.
Sure, we may ruin a couple lives along the way, but, well, that's the price of business. Let's get right into it. Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam.
Uh-oh.
My brother is marrying a woman who really doesn't like me. The feeling is mutual. We normally just avoid each other. I recently received an invitation to their wedding for myself and a plus one. Shortly afterward, my future sister-in-law called to ask me not to come, as my presence would be a sour note on her special day. I'd be happy to oblige, but I like my brother, and I know he would want me to be there and would be hurt if I wasn't. I feel like she's outsourcing a conversation that she needs to have with him. Would it be wrong of me to call my brother and simply tell him that she privately asked me not to attend their wedding, and I intend to honor that request, but that I would love to organize his stag? Or is that merely seeking conflict, particularly as my instinct is to take him to Vegas and bury him alive in drugs and strippers?
Sister of the year. No, you're not wrong for wanting to talk to your brother about that.
Well, presumably brother of the year. Like, I don't think the sister's taking him out to the strip club.
Is the writer a brother or a sister?
I assume the writer is his brother.
Really? Then what?
Well, because if it's his sister, you think she's going to be organizing his bachelor party? I don't think so.
Oh, okay, yeah. maybe. Who knows? So what kind of issue does the writer have with the bride-to-be? I mean, did they have a drag-off? Did they date? Did they have some sort of like romantic history?
I don't know.
Did they get into a fist fight? Were there knives involved? I mean, what happened to where she's going to call him up behind her fiancé's back? Yeah, we'd really rather you didn't come. I know this wedding's all about me, and it's going to be so busy. There's going to be so much going on, but I just can't enjoy any of it because you'll be there. What happened between those two?
I don't know. And there may not be a legitimate reason for it, even, but it doesn't really hint in the letter what the explanation for that might be.
He doesn't go into detail, so I'm wondering what's going on. I would definitely, if I was him, I would definitely talk to the groom, talk to the brother, and say, hey, yo, she just called me. She doesn't, because that is a red flag right there. She's going to go behind her fiance to have, say, her, his brother can't show up to the wedding.
Yeah, and I can't imagine he would allow that.
I mean, again, I'm sorry to harp on the fact that we don't know what's going on, but we don't know what's going on. Why is it such a big deal? She can't look past him being there to focus on her new love, her new wedding union between her and her new husband. It must have been really, really bad.
Or maybe she's just a terrible human being. I don't know. That happens sometimes.
I'm starting
too.
To wonder if it's more of that. She's a trashy human being, and it's not.
He's just trying to separate him from the family.
Oh, and that's probably going to happen long after they're married. In fact, it's probably going to get worse. Oh, we don't need to go to your folks for Christmas. I don't feel comfortable there. I don't feel welcomed there. You ousted my brother from our wedding behind my back.
I don't know, man.
I mean, we're he's asking the question: is it okay if I talk to my brother? I'm going to go a step further and say you owe it to him to let him know about this.
Yeah, you can't just like not show up the day of the wedding and then, you know, have everyone asking questions about that.
Yo, dude, where were you at my wedding? Was that Saturday? Oh, man, I spaced. No, you owe it to him because he deserves to know what's going on. And let him deal with it. And if he is the proper brother, he's going to have a little sidebar with his fiance and say, listen, my brother is going to be at my wedding. If you can't handle one person being there that you don't like, well, you're just... If you can't handle my brother being there, you can't handle my family, we're already onto a bad start.
This isn't going to work.
I don't care how much we put down for the catering. Cancel it. And you go and find somebody who's an orphan, I guess, or find somebody who's a single child.
I mean, what else can you do? I mean, you have to have the conversation with your brother. That's the first and foremost, the only thing. As far as the other side of it, you'd have to know at this point that that's just going to cause a bigger rift, right?
Of course.
And in her mind, it'll validate her dislike of you.
Bigger rift between whom? Her and the
brother.
There's already a rift there.
There is, but I'm saying this will make worse.
Yeah.
And in her mind, this will validate. See, I knew there was a reason I didn't want this guy around. He's already trying to sabotage our marriage from the jump.
Oh, I think everybody would see right through that. And
I don't know that they would.
Because if not, then he's just setting himself up to be the bad guy. And he doesn't deserve to be the bad guy unless, again, we don't have the full information. Maybe, I think
he would be setting himself up to be the bad guy in this situation.
He would be set up to be the bad guy. What happened to Johnny? I don't know. I'm just giving the name Johnny. What happened to Johnny? You skipped your brother's wedding. Well, the bride told me not to. What? Oh, that's ridiculous. And she'd be like, oh, I said no such thing. And no. You need to tell your brother. You need to tell him now. And don't take any phone calls from her anymore. Say, you want to communicate with me? It's through text. Because I want to be able to say, I want to be able to show people what you said.
I think that's fair. I think that's entirely fair. Like, at that point, you can't really take back the things that she said via text. You'll have proof of it right there. Like, yeah,
or,
all communication must be in writing from this point on.
Yeah, yeah. Third option.
Oh, no.
You tell her, all right, I don't want to ruin your super happy, fun day, my soon-to-be sister-in-law. I won't show up. And then, right before they announce the bridegroom for their first dance, all the lights in the place go dark. And just pyrotechnics shoot out. And he shows up dressed like the Phantom of the Opera. I'm here!
You're just trying to make sure that he never gets invited to any family function again.
No, his brother's probably like, yeah, Johnny's here, all right. Look, I knew my brother wouldn't leave. And she'd just be snarling.
Probably, but
completely upstaging the bride.
Yeah, that's the best thing you can do in this situation is upstage the bride at her own wedding. Brilliant stuff, Adam.
I like it.
Yeah, no, let's not do that. But let's go ahead and take a look at one more of these, shall we?
Yep.
Dear somebody who cares.
Uh-oh.
I work at a small company that draws in fantastic people. The majority of my colleagues are smart and fun, and their values align. The boss, Susan, is not fun. She is brilliant, connected, strategic, and a true asset to the work. She's also thin-skinned and impatient and sometimes crosses the line into bullying. I'm one of a handful of managers who report to Susan, and of all of us, I have the best relationship with her. I have found my lane, learned her style and her triggers, and rarely seem to have any friction with her. I've coached others on how to give her what she wants and how to get and stay in her good graces, but that only goes so far. One of my fellow managers is making noises about moving on, and I would hate to lose him, especially when he would almost certainly stay if only Susan would ease up on him. At the very least, I wish I could think of a way to let her know she'll lose a top performer if she carries on like this. Is there a way to do this from a safe distance, and can it be done without sacrificing my good relationship with Susan? She doesn't take criticism well, and I've seen her either fire or force out people she didn't like. I bring in 70% of our household income, which really makes me wary of rocking the boat.
Well, if you're in good with her as much as you think, then, well, first of all, I don't automatically want to assume that somebody in a management position is just hard to work with, thin-skinned. Being a manager is hard. Being somebody who's in charge of things is difficult, and it really chips at your psyche. The stress level really chips away at your psyche, and just, I think, finding a tactful way to say, hey, so-and-so's thinking about jumping ship, and it's because of this. I mean, if you're that good in with her, maybe she'll be open-minded to it. Otherwise, you know, you're going to lose this guy. The business is going to suffer. And I don't know. I mean, what do you think on this?
I don't think there's any possible way you can have the discussion that she's not going to flip if she is the kind of person you're saying she is. I honestly don't see how you manage to reconcile that. Like, any attempt by you to intervene here is only going to draw her wrath.
Unless you go in there and like, hey, personally, I think you're the best boss ever. You are the backbone of this organization. But, you know, we gotta talk about Dave. Dave
doesn't like you.
When you called him lily-livered, you call him yellow, you know, you said
apparently, you know, she just speaks in like 1950 slang.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you? You're a commie?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe ease up on him, or I don't know.
I don't see it going the way that you think it's going to. Honestly, you're probably just better off not saying anything, not getting involved in it. I mean, if he wants to go and tell the higher-ups that, you know, she's that this woman's just making his life hell and that he probably would have stuck around otherwise, you know, let that be on him to do. You getting involved is just going to screw up your position
in
your company.
If there are higher-ups that he can talk to, then absolutely go that route.
Like, it's not like she's the owner of the company or anything.
Yeah, if there's an exit interview and he says, well, why am I quitting? Because of this pain in the... ever watch Devil Wears Prada? Yeah, her. That's who I'm working for. Yeah, this battle axe.
Yeah,
thin
let him.
Skin battle axe. Yeah, her. And then he just goes off. And then maybe he'll be gone. But then everybody else will be like, oh man, what? We got to really pay attention to old battle axe over here. We got to make sure she's okay. What's going on with her? Tell her to knock it off. She's chasing people away.
Yeah, I don't see what else you can really do without basically jeopardizing your employment. Which doesn't seem like a particularly smart idea for you, I would think.
Pull her aside and say, listen, hey, we've got some complaints from your underlings there. And you know how many pizza parties this is going to cost us? Do you have any idea?
Yeah.
Sweeten
that,
up.
That's what you do. You go in there and just start lambasting her. That'll really do it.
Yeah. What? Are you trying to be a bully? What, do you think you're a bully, huh? Do you? I'm not touching you. You think you're a bully, huh? What?
And that's
Stop
how...
hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself.
And that's how That's how Adam got fired from his last job.
Right. The HR is terrible over there. HR is a former Marine.
Yeah, no good comes from any of this.
No.
Yeah, sorry. I hate to say it. Like, that's
awesome. That's a tough one. That's a tough one because, yeah, you want to be able to keep this guy, and you want to be able to work for her. You want to make that money, but yeah, it's just too bad that sometimes she may not even know she's like that. I am a little rough around the edges. You're chasing people away, so that's a little bit more than rough around the edges.
Yeah, she doesn't seem nearly self-aware enough to realize that, though.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. But I mean, if there's higher ups, maybe you should go. The writer should go over her head and say, "Listen, Bob's thinking about jumping ship. It's because of her. You need to do something." And I gave the information, and I'm walking away.
I don't know that that's necessarily your place to do either, though.
I think they would rather know.
She's directly doing it to you, so it's just you're hearing this stuff secondhand.
Yeah. You know, there is that. And you'd walk in and say, "Listen, I heard this from so-and-so. He's thinking about leaving, and it's because of this." As opposed to losing a good worker, and we're like, "If we had only known. Oh, if we had only known, we would have been able to
We would have done absolutely nothing.
Pizza party. We've got, two hot and readys. We cut them into 16 slices, and, thanks for you're a valuable part of this team."
That's realistically what would have happened.
Good on you.
Nothing would have changed. It would have just been that. Pizza for everybody, evidently.
Yeah. Cheese pizza. No pepperoni. No.
Okay, come on. You can't even spring for one, topping. Come on.
Nope.
I feel like you should be able to do
cheese
that much. that's just a sign of a bad employer.
Yes.
We got to hit a break. It is happy hour. Your local alternative is Solid State Radio. We've talked about this a little bit on the show. There's just sometimes where it's not appropriate to bring your kids to literal everything. Especially your really young kids, like
there is,
babies, yeah. Still yeah, nursing, yeah. Things of that nature. There's just some places you really can just stand to leave the kids at home.
As a parent of, still weird for me to say parent. I'm someone's dad. That is scary.
That's a scary thought. I can't believe that this was allowed to happen, quite frankly.
It happened. I'm here to tell you. I don't think kids are allowed everywhere. I don't think dogs are allowed everywhere.
Oh, they are allowed. Well, they're not allowed everywhere, but they should. They should be.
They should. No, not everybody's a dog lover. Not everybody's a kid lover. And somewhere we should find a nice little middle ground there. But no, kids should not be. I'm not going to take Joey everywhere I go.
No, absolutely not. And I wouldn't take any of our family's animals necessarily a lot of places. I'm not going to say kids because we're not having kids.
Bring the cats to Cascades, I dare you. They were here a minute ago. They're gone.
I know people who would probably do that, but that being said, one place that you definitely shouldn't bring your small, your babies and toddlers to?
Where?
A stand-up comedy show.
Oh, God.
Apparently, and now a comedian's under fire for kicking out a toddler from a stand-up show relatively recently. Comedian Arj Barker reportedly kicked out a breastfeeding mother and her newborn baby from his show in Australia Saturday night, forcing a handful of furious attendees to walk out of the theater in solidarity. Barker clashed with the mother at the Athenaeum Theater during his Melbourne International Comedy Festival, where the 7-month-old baby made a few gurgling sounds. "I was sitting there and she gurgled a bit," the mother told Melbourne's 3AW, "the equivalent of someone was coughing." Frandick claimed that Barker stopped and acknowledged the baby before he cracked a few jokes about the situation. At the end of the skit of a little baby in the room, he said, "I speak baby," and she said, "Take me outside." At that point, I don't think he was joking about that, she recalled. The mother claimed her child made a little noise again, but was just being a baby. Barker approached Trish for a second time due to the disturbance. "I was actually breastfeeding when he came and stood in front of me and said he was basically telling me to leave. People were laughing, and I don't think he was joking, so I said to him, 'Do you actually want me to leave?' He said, 'Yes, I do.'" A group of 10 or 12 people, including one man, walked out of the auditorium over the humiliated mother's departure. The woman's family member claimed on X that Barker said the pair were ruining his train of thought. Which, to be fair, yeah, probably was.
Yeah, well, I mean, if your train of thought is derailed so easily, Maybe you're just a bad comic. I mean, in this situation, is the letter done or? Okay. This is one of those rare situations where both people are complete trash. I mean, she shouldn't be bringing a baby to. And I know, I have a baby, but I don't want to miss out on all these opportunities. Well, you're a parent now, and there's going to be. Your kid's 7 months. Guess what? You're going to be missing out on a lot of things because of kids. It's just facts of life. You make everybody uncomfortable when you're bringing a baby into an adult situation like a stand-up comedy show. Most of them, 21 and up. That's it. So, yeah, you're going to make people uncomfortable. So for you to, and you know, I'm not going to get into the whole breastfeeding, non-breastfeeding thing. That I'm going to leave that right alone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that also gets into people's craw, I guess. So you're becoming a distraction for the other people who paid their money to be there. I'm not going to say a distraction to the comic, because the comic, if you're a good seasoned comic, you know how to deal with hecklers. You know how to deal with other things, people coughing, things like that. If a baby is going to throw you off your game, you're just a bad comic. And for him to not be able to do his show and only be able to focus, maybe it's because, you know, when you're breastfeeding, the boobies out, I guess, maybe that's like, he can't concentrate. It sounds like he's a very thin-skinned comic. So I don't know if I
necessarily go that way, because, I mean, you, as a comic, you don't want anyone from the audience, you know, interrupting the performance, whether it's a screaming baby or a drunken man-child heckler. Like,
but in this, I mean, according to this letter, and maybe it was less than, maybe there was some crying, but it sounds like there was some gurgling.
Well, that's what she's claiming.
Yeah.
What she's saying versus what actually happened is not necessarily, she's going to paint herself in the best light to make her look good. He was just being a baby and making a couple noises. Meanwhile, this kid's just screeching holy terror during the set. You think the mom's really going to admit to that?
But at face value,
I don't ever take that sort of thing at face value. I'd never take the statement of the person who's being disruptive at face value.
So I will take a fork in the road here for a second. If the baby was screaming and everything else, then she's trash and the comic was right. If the baby was just making gurgling sounds, a little cooing sounds or whatever, she's trash, the comic's trash, and the baby's trash. No.
No, the baby's absolutely the most trash of all.
No.
Yes. Yeah. I finally put babies on the apology list, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, how does that... honey, you've been to a stand-up comedy show. Don't you remember? You were 7 months old. The kid would be like, you took me to a stand-up comedy show when I was 7 months old? You were, no wonder CPS is on their way.
Yeah, why are you even taking your kid... Why are you taking a baby to a stand-up comedy show?
No wonder we're talking to each other between protective glass and on phones in this jail cell.
Exactly. Like, clearly a life of bad decisions was sown very early on.
Right.
And naturally, of course, people who can't help but be offended had to jump into this, including a politician down that way.
Of course.
Australian politician Ellen Sandel said, I am livid at hearing this. It's hard enough for new mums to participate in society with all the barriers put in front of them. To be humiliated like this for just trying to enjoy the comedy festival is awful. No. Right. There's some places where, some places where if you have a kid, you can't bring your kid to. Sorry.
New mom, fine, whatever. Let's say she's an old mom. Maybe the kid's 10 years old. Taking him to a comedy show? No. That same politician would be like, well, that's just irresponsible.
Yeah. How is this not irresponsible?
You hear what things go on at comedy shows. There's drinking, there's smoking, there's bad language and everything else. And it's just a place for adults to be adults. And you're going to bring a 10-year-old in there? I mean, obviously she didn't, but this is what this politician, and I really wish I could do an Australian accent right, because this would be perfect for it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know...
Is this the only way that you can, have your, you know, you can go out and enjoy things without a dingo attempting to eat your kid? Like, I don't understand.
I apologize to dingoes and Australia.
Yeah. Well, now you say if we leave the kid at home, a dingo's gonna eat it. We're gonna come back.
Gonna break in right through the window.
We're going to have a good time at the comedy show, and then we're going to get there, and there'll just be a bunch of fat dingoes in our front yard.
Yeah, so you can't just, well, I mean, you can't, you're not going to leave the kid home by itself, but, you know, just don't go to the show. Like, I'm sorry, you sacrifice a few things when you decide to bring children into the world.
Yes, yes.
Especially when they're at that young of an age. And one of them is, well, I guess if you can't find a babysitter, you don't get to go out and do fun things.
Yep, that's...
Or certain fun things, at least.
Yep, that is true. And coming from a new dad, yeah, that is true. You have to give up on things. Because you're not going to sit there and say, oh, well, it's because of, I should be able to go out, too. To heck with everybody else in the other 200 people in this comedy club and the promoter and the comics that are there. No, it's all about me.
Hasn't anyone stopped for a moment to think about my needs?
We all think about your needs, Sean, and then we laugh. We laugh so hard.
As most people do. I just can't get behind the thought process of, yes, it's discrimination against mothers to not let you bring your screeching child into a show, into a comedy show, where presumably you shouldn't have children at all.
Okay, so where is the break-off point? When the kid's 7 months, it's okay? What about 8 months? What about a year? What about 18 months? When do you have the cutoff of when a child should not be in a comedy club?
18 years.
18 years. I'd say 21. There's a lot of 18, 19-year-olds I don't want to hang out with.
That's also fair.
Yeah, you can vote, yeah, but still, get out.
No, we're not measuring the time in months. You shouldn't have a child, like, if you really, if it's a particularly, like, clean comedian, I guess, like, you make exceptions down to, like, you know, early teenage years, but no, for the most part, no. Don't bring your kids to the comedy show at all.
I'm sorry, there's just some, I'm also going to say, okay, let me start by saying, there should just be places where adults can be, just go and be adults and not have to worry about kids. Consequently, I also think that adults shouldn't go to a place like Chuck E. Cheese and be like raucous adults. You know, there's a borderline there too.
No, absolutely. Like, and that's why you'll never find me at a Chuck E. Cheese, because, you know, if I don't really want to spend my time around kids and go to places where they're going to run around and be obnoxious or whatever. Yeah,
that's just as well, because I would crush you in skee-ball.
No, you wouldn't.
I would.
You would not.
I would.
We can go down the street after the show, and I'll prove that that's not the case.
Hopefully we've got one over at Axcadia.
Yeah, Axcadia has skee-ball. Yeah, you want to go?
Yes, I want to go.
I'll school you right now, dude. Like, be careful what you wish for. That's all I'm saying.
All right, we can do this. Did we do skee ball at Lapeer Days? Okay.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, that's right. And
hopefully the skating center people are bringing that back this year.
I hope so.
I'm putting the call out to you guys right now up at Laser, the Lapeer Area Skating Entertainment Center. Bring back the skee ball at Lapeer Days this year.
Yes,
we need this.
Yeah.
So I need to show this man what's up.
And I won't bring Joey.
Okay, good. Joey doesn't need to be around this radio show.
No.
This is not a radio show for, you know, young children, let's be honest here. Or children of any age, really.
Yeah, if there's any daycares, like, airing this, you might want to turn the channel.
Yeah, I would probably recommend it. Go put on some nice, relaxing classic rock on WTGV or something.
There you go.
For real little ones, they don't need to hear the kind of things that we're talking about on the air.
No, well, I mean, they could play the Tiger games at daycares, but then the kids start crying.
Javi Baez comes up to bat.
Great, now we got to rock them all back to sleep.
Yeah, maybe that's not necessarily the best idea then. Well, what do? We have them put on the country station, and then they all... all of a sudden, now there's a bunch of babies with sunglasses and trucker hats sitting in their booster seats trying to deliver the real news.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that my baby did not have skull in his mouth when I dropped him off.
Wow, we're really padding out the apology list with this segment, aren't we?
Yeah, wow. Just this segment alone.
I know. Look at us go.
I dropped off a perfectly good baby. You can listen to country music for five. And the kid's wearing Oakleys. He's got a mullet.
And a lifted truck that you can't even crawl into.
Lifted Tonka truck. I mean,
a lifted Tonka truck. Yes.
One of those power wheels.
There you go. Lifted power wheel, and that's where he's got the trucker hat and the sunglasses. And, like, wait, where did he get that phone from? I don't understand.
We're rambling now.
We are. Let's hit a break. Let's close things off. Next, it's happy hour. Stick around.
That's it. It's over.
Jack Daniels!
It is happy hours. We get set to get out of Dodge here on Friday afternoon, but there is one more sports-like topic we kind of have to bring up today.
We've been kind of tiptoeing around it, but let's kick the door down.
Yep, as we often do on this show. I mean, we're not the first show on the station, apparently, to bring it up. I heard last night the show that follows ours bringing up the comments and just saying how just wonderful the things that he said were, and how could anyone possibly be mad by this? And I can see a lot of ways.
Right.
Let's just dive right in. Harrison Butker went and he had some things to say at this commencement speech at Benedictine University. And my first thought here, of course, is the best they could do for a commencement speaker was a kicker from the Chiefs. What was Kadarius Toney not available? I mean, I heard he wrote a speech, but then dropped it. But like, we're really like, just anybody. We gotta get somebody. This thing's tomorrow, and clearly that was the case because it's obvious no one like proofread this thing before letting him go out on stage and say it. And I don't think it really needs to even necessarily be said that I don't agree with most of what was said in this thing.
I mean, he went up there, and first of all, we were Butker fans after the Super Bowl. I mean, he kicked a heck of a game to win a Super Bowl. So we are Butker fans for his time on the field. But he basically
it didn't really make much of a difference. He doesn't play for my team, so I don't care.
I like seeing what he did. I think he did a really good job. He took to the pulpit at a commencement speech and basically said. There's a lot of women here.
Would you like the exact? I have the text of the whole thing right here.
You do? Oh, please.
Yeah, we're not reading the whole thing because it gets really deep into Catholic lore and what have you. So that's not really that's gonna bore half of our audience, and the others are gonna be mad when I mispronounce some of these names. But here's the paragraph in particular. That stands out.
Is it Jesus? No, Jesus, Sean. Jesus. Jesus.
And there were a lot, I mean, he touched on a lot of controversial things. He's, not a fan of abortion. He's not a fan of gay people. He's not a fan of COVID, pandemic restrictions. And I'm not sure why this is still coming up 5 years after the fact. But,
here we are.
He just wanted to cram all the red meat in there that he could.
Yeah.
But this is the one that really stuck out to me as being particularly, why did we even need to go here? Quote, "For the ladies present today, congratulations on an amazing accomplishment. You should all be proud of all that you've achieved to this point in your young lives. I want to speak directly to you briefly because I think it is you, the women, who have had the most diabolical lies told to you. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross this stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you're going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring to this world."
Wow.
And then goes on to say that, about the girl that he ended up marrying, who embraced one of the most important titles of all, homemaker. Like, because you're really going to go out here right now and say that a bunch of women who have just graduated from college, who are presumably planning to use those degrees to go on and work and pursue a career of some sort, that none of that matters. The most important thing is that you're going to pop out babies and make sure dinner's on the table for your husband when he gets home.
You damn well better.
Like,
so
that's
stupid.
Like, that seems like that's read the room, man.
Could you imagine? Because there's some women sitting there going, "I just racked up $100,000 in a student loan debt, and this guy's basically saying I'm just going to be a homemaker."
Yeah. Yeah, I know you all spent tens of thousands of dollars in student loans or your parents' money or maybe even work to put yourself through college, but you basically wasted your time because what you really need to be focused on is finding a man to go be subservient to.
And what kills me is that there's so many people are, I mean, the NFL is just like, whoa, pump the brakes. We don't really agree with that. And now his jersey is flying off the shelves because all of the promise keepers and everything, they just all love this
idea. They love every bit of it.
Oh my God, they just can't get enough of this. And now I'm seeing like stills of like the Handmaid's Tale with like the Kansas City Chiefs logo on there. And what kills me is like the Chargers released a video about their upcoming schedule and done by The Sims. I am a huge fan of The Sims. I've been playing Sims for years, yeah. 20 years. And I have to find this video, but I read basically they're talking about all their
opponents.
And then when they get to the Kansas City Chiefs, there's somebody in a number 7 kicker's jersey scrubbing the floors. I think that is fantastic. I mean,
I love it. He probably thinks it's the most insulting thing on earth. Like, oh, I can't believe they have me doing
women's work. I'm a kicker. The offensive line's like, yeah, that's women's work. Yeah, read the room, dude.
You're basically kind of sitting there and telling these women that have just graduated and are planning on presumably using those degrees to maybe do, you know, some big things in life that, you know, some might find of higher priority than children and homemaking.
Right.
That, yeah. Well, you basically wasted your money.
Wow, I got a...
You don't need it.
I got a bachelor in pre-med, but I should just be staying home and... Oh, good, thanks.
You don't need a graduate degree to go scrub the shower and make sure that... And to run a vacuum. Like,
yeah, really? Thank you, Mr. Dude. Football player whose career is going to be over by the time he's 30. Thank you so much.
No, he's a kicker. They usually, as long as the leg holds out, they usually have the longest shelf life of, you know, most players.
Military and...
Now, that all being said...
Jason Hansen, by the way. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. But that being said, now there's people literally calling for the Chiefs to cut this guy for him not to be able to play in the league.
Okay, and that's wrong.
Yeah, there's no need for this. Like, I don't agree with literally anything in his speech, and... You probably figured that out long before now if you've been listening to this show for any length of time. But the man doesn't need to lose his job over it. Like, I'm not a fan necessarily of people being, you know, a guy getting cut from sports because...
Of his opinion.
Right. I wasn't for it when, you know, a certain former quarterback got blackballed by the league. I wouldn't be, and I'm not in favor of it here.
Yeah. Where are all those people that said, you should just stick to kicking... footballs and it's not stop telling people how to live their lives.
The stay in sports people, or stick to sports people, really.
Stick to musicians. I mean, I remember Paul Stanley of Kiss, and you could probably do a better impression than me, but I mean, he was talking about, you know, things in politics, and everybody's like, why don't you just stick to playing guitar? And I'm thinking, and this goes to Butker as well, these people have seen the world, they've seen what's going on. And they want to have an opinion. They're entitled to their opinion. Butker's entitled to his.
Right.
Paul Stanley is entitled to his. I mean, all the people, like Bono's entitled to his opinion.
Right. No one necessarily wants to hear it, but he is entitled to it.
He's entitled to it, and you can listen to it whatever you want. But a lot of those people, like Paul Stanley, they've seen the world. They've actually had an education as to what's going on. A lot of these people that say, why don't you stick to kicking a football? Why don't you stick to playing a guitar? They haven't left their house. They haven't left their home state in 10 years unless it's to go to a theme park.
To me, it's kind of funny because, A, it always seems like the people that want to call on you to stick to whatever it is that you do, like, they're fine with it, with that, and holding that opinion until it's someone that they agree with, in which case, oh, yeah, you, hell yeah, brother, yeah, you go right. And speak out about that.
Preach it from the mountain, that's right. You got those great heights. Yeah, in your career, and then let people know. That's right. Tell the real news.
And also, a lot of it seems to come from, well, people in our line of work. And quite frankly, and this is where I find it, where I don't like to do the stick to sports, stick to music, stick to whatever it is that you do thing, because Where do any of us in our industry get off being able to say, you know, to where our opinions really coming from that makes them that much more credible? Like, where is it, you know, pretty much any talk show host, like, we're the clown jesters of this whole, of society, quite frankly. We're here to make you laugh, amuse you, or at least, you know, attempt to entertain you. What makes our opinions more important than anybody else's?
Exactly. If you are coming to us for ideas on who to vote for, everything else.
If you're coming to us for...
Oh, my God. Really, I feel bad for you.
If you're coming to us for advice of any sort, I really do feel sorry for you. Like, where did your life go wrong?
Exactly.
So, but we're entitled to certainly our opinions, and as are all these other guys, but... Where do we come off telling people, like, well, you're not allowed to say, like, you can't have an opinion because I don't agree with your opinion.
Right.
And furthermore, you can't have a job because of that opinion, I guess.
That
part I can't get on board with, but I do reserve the right in perpetuity to make fun of Harrison Butker for anything he might say here and now. Yeah. I feel like we can all agree on that, maybe.
Yes.
On that note... Now that we've done that and probably alienated half our audience, let's go ahead and let's get the apologies rolling. We got a little bit of business to take care of in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. Happy Hour would like to apologize to really everybody for the last segment, but Babies, Dingoes, Australia, Daycares, Javi Baez, Country 92.5, and really the entire Staylight Broadcasting family, we're sorry. On that note, stick around. A full hour of local original music coming your way. You're next at a little show we like to call Sessions.
Approaching Autumn, they're debuting a new song tonight called Ooh. Laces Out. Yeah, I love it when bands do this. I really appreciate it when bands trust our show to debut in some new music. So Approaching Autumn, well, it's not, you can't even get it, listeners. I'm sorry. It's just,
you can't have it.
It's apparently just for me, but you can listen to it. The song's called Laces Out, Approaching Autumn. They'll be in studio later on.
Looking forward to it. On that note, we got to go. All being well. Talk to you Monday at 3. See ya.